Emily Omir, your host. And today I'm chatting with Wei Lian Deng, who is currently the Senior Director of Product and Marketing for the Cloud Platform Division at Red Hat. And that's following the acquisition of his Kubernetes security company, StackRox. Thank you, Wei, so much for joining me.
Thank you, Emily. It's great to be here.
So I wanted to jump right in and talk about both what you're doing now and then also sort of the evolution of StackRox. I wanted to start there. And actually, if you could just start by talking about, like, how did StackRox come into being? What was the moment when you had this idea? How did you meet the co-founders?
Sure. StackRox really was born out of this need for a new type of security category when container infrastructure and Kubernetes and cloud native technologies really sort of came onto the scene and started to be widely adopted over the last 5 to 7 years. You had this paradigm shift in infrastructure. And at the same point, I think in parallel, security approaches were evolving. Organizations were thinking about how they could modernize their security programs. And so I think at a very high level or like macro level, StackRox was really born out of the intersection of those two trends. Now, practically, I at the time, prior to StackRox, was at this company called CoreOS, which was sort of prominent startup focused on building Kubernetes tools and Kubernetes distribution, and ultimately it was acquired by Red Hat. So I sort of approached it from an infrastructure perspective. Like, you could see practitioners and people who were starting to adopt Kubernetes in its earlier years. It was really starting to identify some of the gaps or challenges when it came to securing cloud native applications. And I got connected with co-founder Ali Gulshan, and he had a long security background. He had started a security startup called Cyfort previously. He had worked for some of the intelligence agencies. And so he kind of understood this evolution of security and how things were modernizing and changing in terms of how organizations were approaching it. And so we connected and really saw that there was going to be a need, or predicted that there would be a need for new types of cloud native security tools. And so StackRox is really built and founded with the mission of going up after that opportunity and enabling organizations and end users to be able to secure the cloud native tools and technologies that they wanted to take advantage of.
And what was the moment when you and Ali were like, hey, we're doing this, we're going to quit our jobs and start our own company?
I don't know if it was any single pivotal moment or epiphany, but I think that for me, at least, talking to a bunch of early adopters of Kubernetes and cloud native technologies, and also talking to very prominent folks, in the ecosystem and community, like folks like Joe Beda and such, it just, for me, like, it just, there's just overwhelming realization, which is this is a really huge problem. And maybe not everyone has necessarily woken up to it yet. But as more and more people look to utilize all things cloud native, security is going to become more and more of an issue. It's going to become something that needs to get solved. And ultimately, it's a big problem. And I want to go help solve that problem. And so for me, that was just, maybe it wasn't a particular moment, but I think it was a series of realizations where it just made me think, I want to go do StackRox.
Where did the name StackRox come from?
So, we had been playing around with all sorts of different types of names and all these different considerations. You want to find something that you can get a .com domain for and things like that. But ultimately, the sort of two parts of StackRox were sort of referenced this notion that you have a new stack, or the stack is changing, and you also want to secure a large portion of that stack, really referencing the shift in infrastructure that's been going on over the last decade or even longer. And then we want to sort of reference this idea that we're making secure and strong and hardening it and protecting it. And so that's kind of where this notion of rocks came in. And so we kind of combined it into this sort of a portmanteau of sorts. And that's where we ended up with the name StackRox.
Cool. And what was the scariest moment in those early days? And how did you get past it?
Well, I think some of the most challenging and difficult moments as early stage startup founder and leader, I think the ones we the one we encountered, it was not necessarily specific to StackRox. I think many early stage companies encounter it. Have you built the right product? Have aligned? Are you aligned and are you moving towards product market fit? Are you solving a meaningful enough problem that's going to resonate, you know, with your, you know, end users and customers? And so for us, I think that was not intuitive, and it was hard, because if you went back 6-7 years or so, container security was not really widely understood. I would talk to folks and some of them might say, do I have this problem? Is this a problem yet for me? Or not even really understand kind of the scope of the problem, just because some of these technologies are parts of the stack at the time, Docker and container engines and container orchestration platforms like Kubernetes. They were not really deeply understood from a technical standpoint by a lot of folks out there, unless you were actively participating in the community or you were an organization that, you know, was using it in a more, you know, advanced sense. And so I think that the biggest challenge and some of the scariest moments had to do with, are we solving the right problem and are we building the right product? And that wasn't clear at the time. And I think it definitely took some time to sort it out, to think through it, to make sure that it was aligned with kind of where the overall market and where customers were evolving and how they were thinking about going about securing their cloud native platforms and applications.
Do you think there's anything specific about having a security product that, in terms of finding that product market fit? I hear a lot about one of the challenges with security is it doesn't hurt until it hurts you really badly. I'm just curious if there was anything that you feel like is kind of specific to that, this security space.
I think security, like any domain, has different opportunities and challenges that I think organizations and users, you know, run into. You know, I think generally, if you're a large organization, you're running a lot of different security tools, and you know, that creates operational complexity and operational overhead. And you know, I think that's one theme that can be common to users. I think, you know, the other is not wanting to be sort of bolted on afterwards or an afterthought based on how quickly other parts of the organizations, like development teams or DevOps teams, are moving. And so I think there are definitely common pain points that I think one, a company can tackle in order to hit product market fit. But I think you really have to understand kind of the mindset and context that end users and customers are sort of approaching it from, which is there's so many different areas of security. It's so broad. There's so many different use cases, sub use cases, parts of the stack to secure, and dimensions to security. I think focus is in the early days is really important to sort of target a critical pain point or challenge that an organization has in order to align to product market fit. And so at least that's in my experience, one way that early stage security companies can think about building their products and tooling.
And did you think of StackRox as being primarily a Kubernetes product or primarily a security product? And did your thinking on that like evolve or change over the years?
I would say it evolved. I think initially the focus in the ecosystem was more around container security. And I think that was because end users or developers were tinkering with containers and eventually they start to make their way into production. But orchestration and that layer or platforms, things like Kubernetes, were something that came into the picture once these users and organizations evolved their usage of containers. And so I think because technologies like Docker and projects like Docker were, you know, very, very popular, and those were what were, you know, adopted first and sort of like the entry point for how most people started to work with containers, the focus was around, you know, securing containers themselves, individual containers or the container engine or container runtime that was used to manage and run those containers. So once organizations start to run at more scale and they needed additional capabilities, including management, orchestration, and so on, that's when platforms like Kubernetes started to take off. But even so, it wasn't just about Kubernetes at the time. There were several different orchestration platforms that you'd come across in the market. There was Docker released its own called Docker Swarm. A company called Mesosphere had an orchestration platform called Marathon. There were other open source projects out there like Aurora, and some companies even had built their own orchestration tools in order to solve the problems that maybe the broader community hadn't yet thought about or addressed. And so the focus wasn't really so much on Kubernetes security. It was more on container security. And over time, as Kubernetes took a more prominent role in line with how orchestration, more people started to think about orchestration as a central piece of their cloud native strategy. That's when people really started to think about Kubernetes security and how we as a company really tied our identity to Kubernetes security. But I would say starting out, it was really focused more on container security. And I think that while there are differences, I think broadly, in a way, like container security and Kubernetes security are somewhat synonymous today.
Was there a moment when you felt like you got that product market fit? And like, how did you know you were there? Like the moment when you felt like, oh, yes, this is working.
I don't know if there was a particular moment. I think I look to stay extremely close to customers and talking to practitioners and how they were thinking about it, as well as the thought leaders in the Kubernetes community. And I think if there was a particular signal, at least, that suggested that there was product market fit is when more and more people really start to talk about Kubernetes security. Like it was referenced as Kubernetes security started to be a central topic for things like CNCF keynotes or talks. You go to like KubeCon and you'd see more sessions that were focused on different aspects of security. And so for me, I think that was a signal that first the community and the community generally is sort of like the advance guard for who's driving and adopting Kubernetes. And they're really starting to understand and identify the need for security or gaps in security when it comes to this platform or these general environments. And then that would trickle down to customers or end users that you just talk to more generally. And then you'd start to see in the industry, people just trying to reference and talk about Kubernetes security more as opposed to the container security more generally.
What do you actually think Kubernetes security means? Like when somebody says the term Kubernetes security, what's the sort of cascade of assumptions that you would have?
Yeah, I think there's different levels. And so I'll share three different ways I think about it. I mean, I think there are folks, when you talk about Kubernetes security, it's really how do you secure Kubernetes here and now? Like I'm using and running Kubernetes for my cloud native applications, perhaps in production, and I need to secure it, I need to protect it, I need to think about the different components and use cases. So those are things like, how do I secure the control plane? How do I secure the worker nodes? How do I handle everything from vulnerability management to runtime threat detection and incident response and everything in between, including configuration management or compliance? So I think that's a very sort of pragmatic, practical definition of I need something to help me solve this problem around securing Kubernetes today. Then there's, for me, I think about Kubernetes security more broadly in a more forward-looking basis, which is I view Kubernetes as foundational modern part of the infrastructure stack that's here to stay. It's durable, it's lasting. And ultimately, I think as Kelsey Hightower and other folks in the industry have pointed out, it's really a platform that enables additional platforms. So it's meant to be built on, it's extensible, can be customized. And you see this with newer technologies and layers like Istio and service meshes and such that are being built on top of Kubernetes. And so if you take that view, then I think Kubernetes security is really synonymous with sort of modern infrastructure security, which is ultimately if you're going to be running modern applications and modern software on top of a type of platform that either exposes or abstracts away Kubernetes, ultimately you need to start with foundationally securing the Kubernetes platform. And so that's a lens in which I look at it with. And then third aspect I'll highlight is that with StackRocks and our team, Kubernetes security can incorporate or encompass different approaches. And for us, we really think about the importance of being what we call Kubernetes native. And what we mean by Kubernetes native security is about leveraging and extending the controls and capabilities that exist in Kubernetes itself already and enabling users to take advantage of that. So a couple examples are the community has deeply invested in a number of different security controls that the users can utilize in Kubernetes. These are things like network policy for segmenting and isolating and restricting access between and restricting traffic between applications. There's role-based access control to limit who can access particular parts of a given cluster. There's so many different aspects of security that have been built into Kubernetes, and we think about aligning around those as opposed to building separate tooling that creates additional operational complexity, overhead, risk, and so on. And so those are at least like three ways I think about Kubernetes security. But I think, going back to the second is I do think Kubernetes security is foundational to securing modern infrastructure environments going forward.
And then going back to this sort of idea of the trajectory of StackRox, I'm curious actually for you personally, what did you have to learn as you were building StackRox? What maybe sort of the top three things that you felt like you really had to stretch yourself as the company was just getting started and then growing?
Yeah, I think the first, which I touched on, which was really trying to understand how the market was evolving its thinking and adoption of, cloud native technologies broadly and Kubernetes in particular. And so how they were thinking about advancing and maturing their own containerization strategies. And so it wasn't so much about learning about things from a domain perspective or from a technical perspective. It's really understanding how are users and organizations utilizing, implementing, and taking advantage of these different technologies. If you go back 7 years or so, you had organizations that are very sophisticated, like Google and others, who are born in the cloud and running at scale and more familiar with these technologies. But that's not necessarily the lens that we had to look at it through. We had to think about from a standpoint of Fortune 500 enterprises and small and medium-sized enterprises, even small and medium-sized businesses. How are these organizations thinking about potentially taking advantage of these technologies? So that was one big area that I think presented a learning curve because it just had to play out and we had to understand that as that was happening. I think the second is as we built our company and team, it's really about how to, what kind of thinking through and trying to instill a particular culture in terms of what we stood for and what we were trying to do and how we wanted to operate as a team. And I think building culture and having that stick is very difficult. And I think it's critical, to the success of any given company. And so we spent time thinking about the cultural values, spent time thinking about really focusing and honing in on what our mission was and ensuring that the team was aligned around that. So again, that doesn't have to do with this space or domain specifically, but I think it was critical to shaping the trajectory of StackRox. And then I think the perhaps a third thing that would point to that was sort of pivotal or that we really had to learn was to, understand how the importance of a community here, that there was a vibrant, critical community and ecosystem that was driving this forward. And I think that has really shaped the trajectory, not just of us, but of Kubernetes and related technologies as a whole. And practically what that meant for us is we started thinking about how we can connect with and engage with this community in different ways that we had not necessarily done before. And so we started to engage in technical evangelism and spending more time on producing resources and content that people would take advantage of, having nothing necessarily even to do with StackRox. We would write articles and give talks about non-security topics, parts of Kubernetes, things like how does auto-scaling work? How does networking work? And I think this was all, the intent of this was to give back to the community and to share what we had learned or our own observations, because I think we felt like we were learning at the same time as everyone else. The reality is that Kubernetes is a very complex software. And so we had to really take time to understand it. And we wanted to give that back to the community. And we also have undertook additional efforts. We released an open source tool called Kubelinter, and that was focused on the developers identifying misconfigurations in things like their Kubernetes manifests and other artifacts earlier in the lifecycle. So I think this recognition that there's a huge community following behind Kubernetes, and that's incredibly valuable audience, was also an additional third learning for us.
And I'm really glad that you brought up the idea of community and also of open source, because I wanted to make sure to ask how you decided to manage your relationship with open source. StackRox has always been a closed source platform, right?
So it had prior to its acquisition by Red Hat. Now, as I mentioned, we had made available an open source tool, and we'd been looking to do more around open source as part of engaging with that community. And I think that's part of that is where there's a lot of alignment with how Red Hat thinks about it. Because as a part of the acquisition, we did announce, you know, a commitment and intent to open source the entire StackRock software. And so there, I really view this as an opportunity to give to the community a comprehensive end-to-end open source solution for Kubernetes security. I think that there are a number of tools out there and different projects out there, but I think they're quite focused on particular use cases. You might have a tool or project for image scanning or something for runtime data collection or something for policy enforcement. But you know, when StackRock becomes open source, and we've been working towards that, it's really going to be unique in the sense that it's going to have this end-to-end platform for Kubernetes and cloud native security that doesn't really exist today. But I think that's where the acquisition, you know, by Red Hat really, you know, aligned with something that we had wanted, we're looking to do more around anyways in terms of open source and making additional capabilities available to the community.
And did you ever, I mean, there's a lot of companies that start with an open source project first. And I'm just sort of curious if you could talk about, I mean, if you ever considered that or sort of how you formulated or thought about your open source strategy.
Starting with open source is not something that we did, obviously. I think that we felt that there are ways to, you know, serve end users and organizations without necessarily being open source. And I think more generally, for any company, the question about the role that open source plays, I think, is strongly influenced by where and how you think a standard will emerge. Because I think that if you believe that something's going to be sort of like a cornerstone of a given market segment or market space, then I think that leads in favor of having something that is, you know, very referenceable and open and all of that. Now, I think that given the evolution of Kubernetes security and where we are today, I think, you know, it's clear that that's important and why, you know, as part of Red Hat, we're looking to open source the StackRock software so that we can also facilitate and enable more stable, innovative, and ultimately more secure code, a more secure code base and everything. But I think if you went back like 7 years ago, like there was not this very large community yet focused on cloud native and Kubernetes security. And so I think the considerations were different at that time. But I think, for instance, if a company was starting up and wanted to do Kubernetes or cloud native security today, I think the considerations would be very different. And perhaps a decision with, if I were in that seat, I might end up, you know, with a different decision. But I think that sort of the landscape looked quite vastly different from where we sit today.
And what would you advise somebody who is starting out now? Would you say, what would you advise in terms of open source strategy?
I would say, I think it's, you know, critical to understand what the given problem is, as well as what is the role of open source in that particular space. Are there open source projects already? Is it a space where some kind of standard needs, you know, to emerge? Because I think that, you know, open source definitely has a significant role in many different parts, infrastructure and security and both, as well as other areas. But I think that, you know, if you take a step back and think about what your end user is trying to accomplish, open source may or may not, you know, serve that purpose. I think in some cases, for instance, open source could contribute to additional overhead or complexity in terms of what someone has to actually implement or maintain or support themselves, versus another scenario where perhaps someone just wants to, you know, consume some as a service and like it's not so important whether it's open proprietary or not. So I think for founders or people building products where open source comes into the picture, those are some of the considerations I think that thinking through, but ultimately I think the decision whether or not to make open source sort of a pillar of your overall product or company strategy sort of comes down to, you know, a case by case basis.
And then thank you. That's great. I was going to ask just a little bit about the acquisition. I mean, was there a moment when you thought, okay, we're ready to be acquired, or we're next acquisition is starting to look good? Was that something that you were actively pursuing, or was it more an opportunity that came when you weren't looking?
I wouldn't necessarily comment on maybe those aspects specifically. I think what I would share is that we're and have and continue to be focused on building the best Kubernetes security solution in the market. That was the case before the acquisition, and it has not changed after the acquisition. I think that there's a lot of alignment in terms of our approach and our focus with how Red Hat, you know, has thought about its portfolio and also serving, you know, the community via all of its contributions and its existing products. So I think that there just happened to be a lot of alignment. But for us, I think that the mission, the vision, sort of the focus for our team has not really changed from what it was prior. I think that we see just more and more opportunity to build and extend on what we already had being part of Red Hat now.
And how does this change your sort of everyday role, or does it? What is it like going from being the head of a company to being part of a larger organization?
Well, I think for the most part, my focus remains the same. It's on guiding and leading product strategy and execution delivery of the product, again, to ensure that we maintain and extend and continue our leadership in the market. Red Hat is an incredibly innovative organization and has enabled us to, you know, really continue to, you know, build on the vision we set out to accomplish, but also I would say to invest more in terms of pursuing that. I think one of the big differences is that as a smaller company, you have to think about what you can do in terms of with limited resources and limited, you know, reach to some extent. And by combining with Red Hat and joining forces, that just opened up a ton more opportunity in the way of opportunities in terms of what we're able to accomplish. And for us, I think that this whole market in terms of Kubernetes and Kubernetes security continues to, you know, evolve, you know, rapidly. And so for us, we've seen it's given us the opportunity to move more quickly and to further deliver for our customers and users. So I think on the whole, I think that the focus and responsibilities have not changed much for me. I think it's more of I have felt that we've just been able to take advantage of all the opportunities that the acquisition has unlocked.
And if you could give yourself of 4 years advice, or give younger Wei some advice, what would it be?
I think looking back, you know, I look at the success of StackRox as tied to a number of, you know, pivotal decisions, one of which includes aligning and orienting, you know, our product with Kubernetes and it's the trajectory that it's had. But at the time, like, that was not clear. And I think that, you know, that required making, you know, some key bets. So these are informed bets that have a substantial or significant basis for a given choice. But I think, you know, if I could give myself advice, it would be to not be afraid to be bold and to have conviction in terms of these choices you make. And I think as an early stage founder, you have to have that to some extent and may not get every decision right. But I think that if you, you know, get the key ones correct more often than not, then that's going to provide a basis for success.
Excellent. And then how can listeners learn more about you or follow you if they want more?
I'm on Twitter. My handle's Weiliandang, Weiliandang. Or feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. But would love to, you know, chat with other founders or practitioners in and around this industry. I work with a bunch of startups in an advisory capacity. Love to always hear about and learn about interesting things going on in enterprise software and all things cloud native. But those are some of the ways, you know, folks can connect with me, and I would love to do so.
Excellent. Fabulous. Well, thank you again so much for joining me, Wei. This was really interesting.
Thank you so much, Emily.